Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. It's welcome to the West Covina Unified School District Board of Education. This evening is a special meeting to discuss issues involving the district's budget for the upcoming year and 2 years. It's March 28th at 5:37. So this meeting is called to order. The first item on the agenda is items from the floor and public comment. I have three cards, the people asking to speak. First is Marina Magana. It's not on here.
Good evening, members of the board, audience, and Superintendent Mrs. Castillo. My name is Marina Magana, and I'm here on behalf of the nearly 400 classified employees within the district. And I'm here to speak on the possible or potential cuts and how it would affect classified employees and everybody else. We are aware that there are financial problems within our state's budget, which then can affect the district's ability to continue business as usual. So if the numbers and dollar signs say that there needs to be changes in the budget, which can then affect the district's ability to continue business as usual. So if the numbers and dollar signs say that there needs to be changes in the budget or cuts, then do so, but consciously. Put into consideration how your decisions will affect the employees that work here and the students we serve. Every little bit matters and makes a difference. If cuts need to happen, do it, but not excessively or at risk of losing programs or services that benefit the employees and the children. Don't look at cutting vital services such as transportation. Don't look at hiring independent contractors because it might be cheaper in the short run to do jobs that are already established, working well, and beneficial for the students. If we as a district need to save money, we need to think outside the box. We cannot and should not follow other districts and do as they do just because we can or it's a popular thing that's being done around. Be aware that when positions are cut or eliminated, this causes many hardships for the employees and students. When positions are cut, the workload increases for employees that have taken on that extra burden. When shortage of staff occurs, children don't receive the quality of service that is expected and is deserved. This can lead to potential lawsuits, which in the long run is more costly for the district than to have just kept the employees status quo. When considering cutting a person's hours, remember that every little bit matters, even just those 30 minutes, because that word just is something I have heard many times. Oh, it's just 30 minutes. It's just an hour. Those just by cutting a part-time employee's hours by 30 minutes a day could mean the difference of having electricity and running water in their home for the month. It means that a child will have to wait that much longer to receive help in the classroom at risk of losing many teachable moments. So just 30 minutes does make a difference. Now, I would like to share some comments that have come directly from classified employees. When I asked them what could happen or how, when I asked them for ideas on how to save money for the district, where cuts could happen, many of them felt very discouraged. And they said that we feel that the district does not care, or the school board, about us as employees. So these were just some of the comments that I received from some of these employees when I talked to. And some make sense, some don't. But like I said, I will share their comments. A few of our employees said, when they cut my hours, I lost my benefits, and I can't afford insurance now. I found out that school members get benefits. And if that's true, why don't they do anything or give anything up? Why is it always us, the classified? And like I said, these are just comments that I'm sharing from them. It's not my personal views. A few other employees said, if the district doesn't have any money, then why did the superintendent and administrators receive raises? Like I said, it's their comments and how they just perceive things. Another comment was, why is the district office so top-heavy with all those administrators? One of them could fund five of us instructional aides. Another comment was, stop spending so much extra money on little perks and technology. Why do we always, our principals just received new phones, was a comment. Well, some comments that I received. Can't they just use their own phone and use it as a tax deduction? So these are just little things that employees are seeing, employees are feeling, and I told them that I would share that with the board tonight. So in closing, I pray that the district does not have to make any drastic decisions that will create hardships for the employees and the children of West Covina, and that our financial status will remain solvent. However, if it does get to that point, we ask that no rash decisions be made. Remember that every little bit taken from one affects many. We as a district and you as a school board members need to be creative on how to save money. Everybody needs to do their part. Fair share from all, not just from one. Thank you.
Thank you, Ma. Pam Rosenthal.
Good evening, school board members. Ms. Castillo. I am a member of CSEA and have also negotiated, so I've known many of you a long time. I think Mike Spence and Steve Cox and I popped up about the same time being active in West Covina. I've been employed here since 1988, so I think we all have a vested interest. Tonight I'm speaking as an instructional aide, a classified employee. I'm one of those lucky enough to have a five-hour position. And one of the things that I wanted to speak about was the necessity for maintaining those hours to give consistency and connection to the children that we serve, the special needs children. I love them. I've done this job a long time, and I truly love these kids. And I know that the connection that we make with them now and the consistency that we have when we have the extended hours, it lasts a lifetime. I was sitting in Laughlin by the pool waiting for my 12-year-old and my husband, and this 6-foot-tall man kept staring at me. And he kept staring at me, and he made me kind of uncomfortable. And then he walked over, and he goes, "Are you Mrs. Rosie?" And I said, "Oh, my gosh, yes, I am." And he goes, "I was in your class when I was in the second grade, and I loved you."
Oh, my goodness.
And you were so wonderful, and blah, 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 blah. And I mean, and this happens to me all the time. And it's because I have the time to connect with them and to build things. This year, I was moved to West Cove. We have a primary center, and we had a very troubled child that was an RSP. I'm an RSP now. And he kept running away, and they were chasing him and trying to get this little guy. Well, as it turned out, he had been in my SDC class, and I said, "Oh, my gosh, I know that kid." So he was jumping over the fence trying to run away, and I said, and he said, "Okay." And he got down, and the principal said, "Wow, how did you do that?" But see, I had a connection with this little guy. I spent hours with him. I cared about him, and we had bonded. And so this child didn't leap over the fence and run just because I gave him the look, and he knew to trust me because he knew what I said I meant. So we need to keep our hours. We need to keep these connections with the children. We're a big, big benefit to them. And I know that sometimes you guys think that we're costly. I understand we service the few, not the many, but it's such a precious few. And so when you have to make your cuts and when you think about the money, just think of these little kids and how much we mean to them and how that consistency builds. And later on, it may save some kid's life from jumping over that fence because it's like, "Oh, gosh, I know her. I better get down because I spent so much time with them." So when you are making these cuts, which I know are difficult, please just remember how valuable we are to them and how hard we work. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Frank Kennedy.
Good evening, Mr. Cox and school board. Just have two questions I want to ask. The first question is a public record request. I would like to know how much we have spent on legal counsel for Edison and board members in the last 4 years, and if I could get a hard copy of that, Madam Superintendent.
Yes.
Thank you very much. And my second question is very, very simple. I would like to know, what are you going to cut first? Thank you, sir.
Intriguing. All right, thank you. That then goes into the business session. Go
ahead. Tandy, can I get you to come up?
Board members, thank you for allowing us this opportunity to meet tonight to discuss the district's budget. Our objective tonight is to develop a shared perspective of the budget and to get the board input. As you know, the budget is a cyclical annual process that crosses over time and over school years. It's a living document that changes all the time, providing a snapshot point in time information. It requires planning and regular revisions. Our number one priority continues to be to keep our students as the focus of our work by aligning resources and services to meet their needs and to continue to keep them at the center of our attention. Think for a moment what a distinct pleasure we have had to serve a district who has not had to make cuts in the last 5 years. In fact, we've gave 2 raises in the last 5 years. We have had the opportunity to work and focus on increasing the portfolio of opportunities for our students. They now have a full-day kindergarten, a primary school to ensure they receive the foundational educational experiences which will support their academic achievement. We implemented after-school instructional support and Saturday supplemental instruction. We have more small schools than before. We added Walnut Grove and Edgewood High School. We have maintained class size reduction, safe and improved modernized school facilities. Our employees have received no layoffs, no furloughs, or cut in compensation. The student achievement continues to improve in our district. We are fortunate to have been able to build a fiscal reserve to continue to fund our priorities. So let's look at some of the guiding principles that we have discussed with the board before. The board and the leadership in the district has always agreed that the program quality is essential. We have to be as thoughtful as possible in directing spending because changes or cuts during this time of fiscal austerity carries risks and unintended negative consequences for our students and schools. I recommend we begin the budget development process by reviewing the board's priorities. We've looked at funding instructional textbook and materials. The state told us we could delay that fund. We wanted our students to have the most updated textbooks and materials. The state said we could reduce K-3 class size. We maintained K-3 class size. The state said that we can continue to defer some of our maintenance and some of our reserves. We have not done that. So in light of our efforts on behalf of special education, behalf of our GATE students, on behalf of our students who are English learners, we have provided many, many resources through partnerships that leverage our resources. We work with YASIS, we work with ROP, and others in the community to continue to give our students the very best education that we can. Obviously, we know that a meeting of the minds during budget cut is very difficult. But the district needs to do so very thoughtfully and carefully. If you look at the calendar that the district has, you will see that there are many opportunities for the board and the leadership of the district to plan, to revise, and to account based on accurate accounting and standardized fiscal practices. All of you know that we have yearly audits and that LACO monitors our budget all the time. In December, you received the first interim. In March, you receive the second interim. In May, you'll receive the revised budget, and it will be based on the governor's revisions. As you know, and you've heard in the news, there are many, many changes that continue to go on. First, we were going to maybe have an election in June. Now we probably are not. So there are many things that are happening at the government and state level that will have an implication. But finally, on June 30th, you will adopt our final budget. I would like to introduce our Assistant Superintendent of Business Services to go over the district's budget and any questions that you have. Mrs. Baston.
Good evening. I wanted to begin the presentation tonight with where we left off on the interim budget, so everybody's at the same place. So our funding assumptions for 2010-11 was we continue with our average ADA, 8,828, and we have our revenue limit based on that ADA to $5,217. Now, in 11-12, we've already been given notice that that revenue limit could be lowered by $330 per ADA, and that equates to about $3 million annually to us. Now, we're hopeful for the June election to extend those taxes. When I met with you a couple weeks ago, each day goes by, it's a little less likely that's going to happen, but hopefully we still have another chance in November. But if we don't get that election in June, those taxes expire June 30th, and that'll have an immediate impact on our revenue. The other thing that's really impacting us into the 11-12 year is the cash deferrals, as well as this year. And that's where, even though that we're earning the revenue based on our ADA, we're not actually getting payment. So when you look at our financials, you'll see a fund balance, but we'll have problems meeting cash flow because we're really not getting paid for those amounts. We're assuming that our student enrollment remains the same this year and the next 2 years out when we did the interim budget. Right now we're focusing on 11-12, so we're saying it's about the same. And that's a credit to all the wonderful programs the superintendent spoke about. Many of the districts around us have declining enrollment, and we're very rare in that, at least being able to maintain where we are. Also in 11-12, we're going to lose federal funding for the Ed Jobs and the ARA. That's $3.2 million. And the COLA funding is basically projected at zero for categorical as other programs. So we met last time. We went over the financials. We had this year's approved budget for 10-11, which gave us $68 million in revenue, our expenses of $73 million, and gave us net fund balance of $16.8. Through a series of various items, one being accounting adjustments for about $3.6 million, some anticipated revenue, we were able to actually to improve our projection for this year and being able to almost break even our revenues up to $78.6 million, giving us a very strong fund balance of $22 million. Now, when we start looking out at 11-12, we really are losing that federal revenue we talked about, all the one-time funding that we just spoke about in the revenue, and that's the approximate $12 million decrease there. When that happens, our contribution to the fund balance, instead of being break-even, we're actually encroaching almost $7 million, and that starts to decline our net balance. Still, with $15 million on the books, we have about, it's about $5 million a month, so you have about 3 months out there. As we go down. Now, if we looked at the same information with a tax extension, whether it comes in late June or it comes in November, hopefully that would bring our revenue up another $3 million for what we're losing, and you see that same improvement in the net balance. Now, when we kind of look at ourselves historically over time, and it starts with the 2004-05 year, goes out through 11-12 there, the blue line is the revenue line and the red line is your expenditures. That gap is that what we've been contributing towards the fund balance, so we've been very healthy. When we get towards the 9-10 year, that starts changing. Now, our revenue is lower than our expenditures, and that continues out. In 10-11, we jump back up to about even, and that's because of all those one-time adjustments. If those weren't able to happen, we would have continued to be, our revenue would have been less than our expenditures. Even with the taxes, there's that slight increase, but we're not breaking even here, and that means we're eating into our reserves. And again, looking over time, if you look without taxes at our fund balance, it almost looks like a normal business curve, 5 years up, 5 years down. So it's something that may not be untypical to a business cycle, but for us, we've been growing, and so now this is changing, and again, because of that huge change in the ADA, that's what's the major impact to our revenue. Again, with the extension, you see that our fund balance is stronger. It's almost level. But this is the one of the focus points. It's not only what we have in a fund balance as a receivable, but we have to pay our payroll with cash. And unfortunately, what the state has done to try to work out their financial troubles is to defer their payments, their cash payments to us. And as you go down the list, in September 2010, they deferred 100% of our revenue for that month into December. And it keeps going each month, percents down. So we basically get about one-third less in our revenue than we would have typically gotten in cash. And because we have that strong fund balance, we're able to weather it through this year and probably into next. But then depending upon if we get the tax extension or not, what our actual expenses are, will determine how far we can go with that. And I apologize to the audience for the eye chart here. Hopefully they have the hard copy handout. It actually shows cash flow. And this is actually taking into account the actual cash we get in, not the revenue we earn, and the expenses by month. And so as you look across at revenue, you see the months that actually have dashes. That's when we're getting $0. But we still have that payroll to meet. In the very far right-hand column is the deferred revenue for the year, which is the $15 million of our total almost $79 million that we are supposed to get. So that's, a significant portion why our expenses continue. Typically what happens in your expenses start up for a year, there's you get going, you have staffing, you have projects you're trying to get in place. So your expenses kind of accelerate through the year. Either you have subs issues happen or you've got your projects in place and now you're purchasing. We were able to work with Cabinet, and one of the differences between this projection and the interim we had before, this is a little bit better, is as a Cabinet we decided there should be a way that we actually aren't going to spend $1 million from what our total budget was. Because you have vacancies, we have projects, we have carryover, all that's built into the budget is being spent. And again, we want to be really realistic when we're starting to look at if there's a need for cuts or not. Will we really spend every dollar that's in our budget? And typically we don't. And that's why we've made this adjustment. And again, if the taxes pass, we're $3 million better. But the expenses remain the same. And it gives you a better cash position. But when you, this is an 11-12. If we look out, the bottom line is really your ending cash balance, and that's probably the focus. We stay positive till the end of 11-12. And again, because of the huge deferral in June and the also in May, that's really affecting our ending cash balance, and our cash balance starts to go negative. I get asked a lot of questions like, what is the cost to run the school district? How many days is in our school year? So I supplied some of those common stats for you all. Right now, we have our number of school days, 184. The number of school days required in 2010 was 180. They have given us that flexibility to reduce it down to 175. If we look at the number of certificated staff we have 482, classified to almost 278. And you can see what the annual combined salaries are for each of those. There's steps and columns. The benefits and then your overall expenses. Transportation seemed to be a topic, so we highlighted that, what it cost. Even though most of the transportation is during the school year, that's we divided over 10 months, even though we do field trips and things during the summer. And our utilities, our electrical bill is the biggest bill, and so that's what we highlighted. When you look at that as an overall cost, again, the big portion of our expenses are staff-related. So you have about 73% or so is direct salaries and benefits. With every person, though, you have a computer or you have utilities, and those costs continue to add up. Now, this is the current year, and we have significant capital outlays because we're finishing up the fire restoration. If that wasn't there, the percent of our expenditure on staffing would be higher than what you see here. It's more in that 80-plus percentage range normally. So what I want to do is just provide you information so you can see where we are, what the projected financial placement of the district would be, and then hopefully to have a discussion and move forward with direction from the board, what we would like to do with the budget. This is a tight year, so we'd like to get started a little bit earlier, hopefully by the end of April, and really have robust discussions with everyone so that we can come up with a budget that is lean, so you don't have cuts where you don't have to, and we don't find at the end of the year that we've significantly underspent the budget, because then we've made decisions we may not have had to if we were cleaner with our budget. Thank you.
Um, I guess it's fairly evident that deficit spending is going to be with us for a while. Do we have an idea, we come up with an idea about what is an acceptable deficit and how we're going to fund that? Or is it our intent to spend more revenue than we anticipate receiving? And if so, is that basically context from prior year revenues that didn't get spent and now we're spending them now? What's the status?
I'll try first and then I'll call on you, Ms. Bastin. But I'll use Ms. Bastin's words. We need to scrub these numbers because, honestly, there's a lot of things that go into budget development that, besides the deferrals that keep throwing you off in terms of cash flow, the district has been very conservative in how it budgets. And in the past 3 years, for example, our textbooks and our supplies have changed from year to year because we wanted to have the latest and best textbooks and materials that we can. So the way we look at this school year, we're going to end up in the plus category. And last year was the year that we felt we fell, a little setback of $4.7 million, which if you look at it, if you look at that number against the projections, we have to go back and see exactly what caused that. And so we want to analyze to see, we know that special ed is an encroachment, but we also believe there's other encroachments that we need to look at. So, Ms. Bastin?
You're required to have a 3% reserve, so that's about $2.5 million right there, so you need to have that in your fund balance. And then it depends on your cash flow. If we had, you know, the 2 or 3 months of payroll, then we would know that we can always make payroll from month to month. Anything above that, you know, is you're reserving for the future. Like you said, the maintenance on the buildings, our textbooks, what are we going to do? If we don't start building a reserve, then when it's time to purchase those things, you don't have them. On the other hand, if we have to dip into our programs and all, what is going to be the impact if we reduce those programs in order to build those reserves? So it's a very delicate balance of what we need to do, but legally at least you need the 3 months, plus I would ask for at least 2 months of payroll reserve.
Over the last 6 years, we've increased our fund balances from $8 million to almost $25 million. A small reduction last year in that, but we're projecting now beyond this year, beyond 2011, which is at or near a break-even, relatively. But going beyond that, we're looking at, you know, into 2012 at almost an $8 million deficit, and 2013 another $8 million deficit. That will substantially reduce the amount of funding that we have available. Deferrals are not. I mean, deferrals will only hurt that. It certainly isn't going to make it any better. I ask about this idea of how much is an acceptable deferral. I mean, there are people that, you know, truly believe that if we make $100, we can't spend $105. I mean, that's, you know, that we ought to go, and it's a philosophy that they would intend to follow. Does that then not apply to school districts?
I would say it applies to school districts, and even more, if you earn $100, you only can spend $95 because you need to put money aside when there's a change for those ADA that you don't expect, when there's something that you didn't expect in your budget. If you're not building, you can't spend dollar for dollar and even survive in an educational environment. We need to spend less. Like you said, we had a fund balance of $25 million. We're projected at 12-13 to be down to $3 million, which is our legal reserve limit. And when you look at cash, we won't have cash for payroll. We'll have to borrow from our other funds that we've built up.
There's an argument that we've been saving for, in effect, the rainy day. Is this the rainy day?
It is the rainy day. I don't think it's the big storm. This $330 reduction, according to LACO, is the best of the worst story. That this number could be a $1,000 reduction, and then you'll hit the storm. We're not going to know where we are right now with the governor's budget in place. there's still, you know, $14 billion in cuts that still need to go out, you know, and they say that's on schools. So this 330 isn't the end of the story, and that's why, as the superintendent said, this is through steps and stages. But I think the prudent thing to be is if we're going to lose the $3 million, maybe plan to at least recover that $3 million in your status quo where we were spending, and, you know, limit that deficit spending, that encroachment, and see what we can do after we do that. Is there a way to save other dollars? Any dollar you save in 11-12 is going to help you in 12-13. It's already going to put you in a better place. Right now, we're pretty limited in the 11-12 year of what we can do because we've already passed the March 15th notices. You're limited to those people that have already been given notice for those reductions and the certificated. So the things that you have to work with are classified, the school year, school sizes, and programs. And as a district, you have to decide your priorities on those programs and what best to do, and then we could go back and quantify that and bring you back various scenarios. But I would think with that additional loss of revenue, and that's going to be the best of the worst again, we should at least plan for that.
You know, we've been told that over the years, and Mike and I have been involved with this, Cammie, for quite some time and seen ups and downs in that, but never substantially reduced. And sometimes we'll have funding coming from, you know, revenue limit money from the state that maybe go down, but usually then it's we're subsidized, I'll use for lack of a better word, subsidized with federal funding or other grants, and so we've been able to ride those out to extent. I think we're at a bit of a crossroads here where I don't see the federal government coming to our aid, if you would, and secondly, I mean, state revenues going down from $70 million down to $60 million, and quite honestly, I don't see that going up. And we're working at expense numbers. If you look even over the last 6 years, I'm projecting out after 5 years passed and going out another four more, we're looking at spending in the $70 million and revenues in the $60 million. We can't do that, can we?
You won't be able to because you run out of money and then you become into receivership. So, definitely.
And we've been doing this, and Pam's. Ms. Rosenthal's stories are heartbreaking, and we do know the impact that, you know, our teachers are classified, even administrators to some extent having the impact on children. We're here for altruistic issues, but we also have a responsibility not to go bankrupt. We've done that once. We came out of it very proudly. Very strongly, and we've worked very hard not to be in that position. We've got considerations from the associations over the years and fully understanding about what it is that we've done. As we ride those ups and downs, I don't see that changing. I don't see these downs changing for the next decade. State has to fund its current operating costs. It has to fund the promises they've made with respect to pensions and budgets, and has to make payments on their debt. It's just not going to trickle down to us. So I don't see any other resolution other than cutting that $70 million down to a number that makes it, even though we've got money in savings, you talk about the storm, I looked at it a slightly different way. I'm looking at, well, what happens when the roof actually leaks and we need to replace it? Mm-hmm. And we don't have funds to do that, and we're going to try to go to people who have, try to get property taxes or bonds or passed or something like that, and it's just not going to happen these days. So unless we look at this very seriously and cuts going forward and setting our priorities, as Ms. Castillo said, then anyway, that's what I hope some of the purpose and some of the things that we're going to get out of this meeting. Anybody else you want to speak? Tammy, go ahead.
I had a question about the sheet you sent out to us, Ms. Bastin, The certified salaries, can you explain why the reduction of over $1 million from one year to the next? And the second part of that question is, how did the benefits get reduced? Is that a reduction in staff then?
It will be for those one-time costs or for expenses.
And what is the cost of step and column this year, and what is it next year? And is that the same amount for this year? I'm sorry. Or did you say you didn't have it for this year?
I don't have the actual number in here, but I believe it's the same number.
Can you verify that in an update? Thank you.
13 days from now.
Also, has there been an analysis done on the monetary impact of San Jose Edison Academy becoming an independent charter school? What impact that may have on us?
I haven't done an in-depth analysis. My understanding, working through the superintendent through the legal, is they would continue to pay us the 3% fee, and that's really the impact to us. That's the financial actually gain to the district by having them as a charter school. If they were no longer connected with our district, we would lose those dollars.
So we're anticipating it all going smoothly and there it to stay status quo.
We're anticipating that they still would be associated with the district and we continue to receive that 3% fee.
Those are my questions for right now.
Thank you.
Jessica.
For transportation costs, you mentioned that some of this cost is based on extracurriculars. How much of the transportation cost is based on extracurriculars?
It's actually a small part, and what happens with the extracurriculars are actually charged back to the school district and, back to the school sites. Let me grab a page just a moment. We have a total charge back to the schools of $192,000, so that would be for all, including field trips, sports, and other trips as well. We currently charge back $2.10 a mile and $26 an hour, and that's compared to other districts that are charging closer to $5 a mile and $30 per hour. So that number hasn't changed in many years. It seems to be something that was set 10, 15 years ago. So what we charge back to the sites may be understating what our actual cost is. We're in the process of doing that analysis.
Ms. Polis brought up some difference in the expenditures for certificated salaries, and you mentioned positions eliminated because of one-time funding. Are you talking about positions that were funded through grants, or are you just saying because a certain amount of dollars are going to be gone, you're expecting a certain amount of positions to be eliminated?
This reduction, the 2.3, ties back to the federal reductions, mm-hmm. and where those are one-time fundings, they're usually for not ongoing positions, but one-time expenditures as well. So when that expense went out, we did reduce expenses, and that was shown in the financials in the interim as well as tonight, and they're in our interim budget as well.
My understanding, and I may be incorrect, that we use some of the EdJobs money to help fund positions that are normally ongoing in the school district instead of bringing in more staff. So, one, is my understanding correct? And two, if instead of bringing people on, we use the one-time money to sort of supplement and keep our bottom line a little bit more stable, why would we be eliminating positions because one-time money is leaving? Because we didn't, I guess the question is, as far as I understand, we didn't use one-time money to bring in new positions or keep positions, so why would they leave with the one-time money?
Okay, I'll go back and verify it. My understanding is, like with lottery money, if we have one-time money, we don't spend it for ongoing type issues. This was reported in the first interim to be equivalent to 25 FTEs. I don't know if that's really one for one. But I can go back and verify with the positions. But my understanding is those dollars were used for one-time type things. May have been able to free up someone to do something else and bring in somebody as a temporary basis. But I can go back and match those dollars for you.
Okay. Yeah, that would be great because it was my understanding that it was to free up cash flow, mm-hmm. not because we needed the help in other positions.
Yeah, and the reduction is in the restricted area, mm-hmm. which is for this one-time type funding. It's not in the unrestricted funds, so I believe it is. But I'll verify it for you.
Okay. And you mentioned in some areas that we were, I guess the best word is over-allocating. What areas have we been consistently over-allocating funds for?
I believe you mean encroachment?
No.
Overspending?
If we're budgeting, let's use attorney's fees, $750,000 a year, are we actually using the $750,000
okay.
a year?
Well, we're not fully utilizing the budget. Okay. It's going to happen in staffing sometimes because you're guessing what your overtime is or positions. Positions can go vacant for a few months before they're filled, so you have some money in there. Our biggest account is in the supplies, materials, books, because we have a lot of money in that for restricted funds. And those are projects that can, you know, get started and then carry over to another year.
Well, restricted funds carrying over, that could be a situation where we're planning something in the future. Are there areas where we just restricted that we're not spending where we should be or reallocating? Are we going to see that?
Well, I can tell you, I don't know about should be, but I can tell you what we've budgeted and what mm-hmm. we do spend. So right now in the 10-11 year, we had about $1 million, $1.5 million in salary for classified and certificated, where it looked like we wouldn't really spend that. We had about $2.5 million in the supplies and materials line, which we had not allocated for sure to spend something. So that's where we took $1 million off of that particular line. That's probably projects that will be carried over. We won't see the expenditure.
Okay. Sorry, I have a list I'm going sure. down. I've had to cross off it. Other people have asked questions. We did sort of talk about lottery funds. How much are we carrying over each year?
We spend a year in arrears. Mm-hmm. So, and those are distributed out to the sites. I can get you the actual numbers, what sites don't spend, but you know, that's a good portion of what the sites are available for their direct funding outside of the staffing. But I don't have that.
How much are we spending on professional development annually?
I'm sorry, that might be a better question for Ms. Ballantyne.
I think when we look at all resources and all sites, it's probably close to $700,000 when you include release time and everything.
Pull your microphone up closer, will you, please, when you speak.
Okay, and now the fun part. you did bring up, you know, deferrals from the state and programs that aren't fully funded. What programs do we have from the state and even federal government that are not fully funded, and how much is the difference between what we should be getting and what we're actually getting?
Getting back to encroachments again, it's really special education, which is about $4 million. I think we talked about $1 million also in transportation. Mm-hmm. And our own transportation for regular transportation, including the events, is about $200,000, I believe.
Any other areas?
Those are the major ones.
You said special ed, $4 million. Transportation, how much?
Another million, yeah.
Is that the full number or the encroachment number?
The encroachment number.
Okay. What categorical flexibilities have we used?
Just about all of them.
Any specifics?
Go down a list of all
any areas we may have missed.
Yeah, the in talking about something we've missed, we do work with Ms. Valentine very closely. Anything that before was categorical only, that you didn't have the flexibility of spending outside of those, or spend all those dollars. But we also want to coordinate what's being spent and what's needed for programs. So, you know, that's where, again, you're going to have some, you know, maybe overspending. You're already overspending in special education, so I'm not quite sure.
So looking at our budget, you can't name something specifically. Like, I know some areas where we've gotten flexibility that we haven't had before. It's been a choice of the board to not go there. Like, and this isn't necessarily categorical, but, you know, we had the option of dropping our reserve down to 1%, and we chose not to. Mm-hmm. So what other areas have we done that in? And
first, for each of the restricted items that now we have flexibility, they're unrestricted, mm-hmm. we're tracking them under a unique OPTA code so that we can see what we're actually spending in the two. Like for maintenance, it used to be you had to spend 3% of your general funds for that. We don't do that anymore, but we are still tracking it. And there is this kind of what our reserve could be. It's 3%. It's not something that can go down to 1%.
A couple of years ago, they allowed districts in financial trouble to lower it to 1%. Thankfully, we're not in the position where we needed to do that. So transportation is one area where we didn't necessarily use some of the flexibility that was available to us.
Well, I guess it's how we're defining the flexibility. All these accounts now that have flexibility, like tier three accounts that are available to be used, we're using any of those funds. So not only are we spending all these funds, we're spending what we do get in as revenue and money you got from years ago. So that's why I'm a little confused with the question, because we're deficit spending at, like Mr. Cox said, $7 million, $8 million a year. We're maximizing all of our funds available to us, including the flexibility, and still running out of money and going into our fund balance.
Okay, I'm confused because I see the first time when we really... Our ending balance goes down $7 million projected for 11-12, but prior to that, we were increasing our ending balance, and so I'm confused as to how we were deficit spending $7 to $8
million. Okay. In the graphs, like on page 6 and 7, after fiscal year 8-9, mm-hmm. you started deficit spending. So 9-10, 10-11.
So did you mean total $7 to $8 million? Because it surely wasn't $7 to $8 million a year, or we wouldn't be where we are right now.
No, not per year. I'm sorry. In the last couple years. So again, that's why the graphs on 6 and 7. You know, if we look back at 4 or 5, our revenue and expenses are just about equal. And then we started growing in the difference between those is really what we're putting into the end fund. And that goes on to about the end of 8-9. So when you start looking at year 8-9 and going forward, so that's projecting out the 3-4 years here where we started the deficit spending.
The financial projections without tax extension chart, I believe we had at a previous board meeting. Mm-hmm. And I could be misremembering, but you have $15.3 million as 11-12 projected. There's some reason we don't have the 12-13 this time, because I thought it was going to be a bigger drop with 11-12 and going forward.
You're correct. The previous board meeting presented the second interim. We did have 12-13 here, and working with the superintendent, we felt that was better to focus on the next budget year, which we're focusing on now. But you're correct. If we went without taxes, we were projecting to be another $7 million, and that would leave us a net fund balance of $8.3 million, which is about 5 or 6 weeks of payroll. And if we got taxes, again, that'd be $3 million more.
That's all I have for at the moment.
Mr. Spence?
Actually, Ms. Shoemaker started on one of the questions I have, which is looking at, because, I mean, when we look at this, you know, I think we have to look at 12-13 and 13-14. Because, you know, if we do nothing based on what you just said, basically we're out of money in 13-14. Is that right?
Right. The end of 11-12, you start having problems. Go negative, and 12-13 carries that problem forward. Combination of the reduced ADA and the deferrals, you have cash flow problems. And you're correct.
Well, you have cash flow problems, but I mean budgetary problems. I mean, we'll talk about cash flow in a second, but I mean budgetary problems.
Right.
By 13-14.
Yes.
You're right.
You'll definitely will. You'll be down to the 8.3 again. So if we're there and we need the $2.5 million just for our reserves, then that gives you about $5 million then or so for your payroll, and that's 1 month's worth. So you actually, the financials will look bad. You will have run out of money long before that, so you won't even be paying your payroll. So that's why I keep focusing back on the cash flow. The financials are going to look better because it's based on accrued revenue we've earned but not received. But when you're losing 30% of that and you're overspending by, you know, 10%, there's a 40% difference, and you run out of that money very fast. Then we would, next step would be to go into our other fund accounts, 14 and 21, where you have money for the maintenance of the buildings and those enhancements. And once those are spent to trans and very quickly, we'll have a problem.
And I wish that would have been included in here, by the way. That would be helpful, I think, to us, because we got to look at it a little bit longer term than just 11, 12. I don't know about using it. I know the county and the state have us use the word tax extension or not tax extension, but that's really a function of the governor's budgeting system, not necessarily. I mean, that's his decision on how he's presented a budget, is that if there's no tax extension, then he'll cut education. That's not really, I mean, that's the correlation.
Correct.
Yeah,
and
so.
His proposed budget included the
tax
extension.
It's his proposed budget.
Now he signed it, so it is the budget, and so there's that huge gap because we don't have that extension.
Right.
So we don't have a June vote. We won't have a tax extension. We'll be hoping in November for new taxes. There won't be an extension of the current.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean that the governor can't, reallocate and decide to cut something else or whatever, I mean, to make up that difference.
Exactly. So our assumption here is there's just that 330 impact. So, you know, again, we're not assuming that it's worst case here, which would be that maybe the 1,000 or even greater off the ADA. We're looking at something that's probably more probable.
On the cash flow issue, what are our options for deferrals of payment? Obviously, we wouldn't want to do that with payroll. But, I mean, how fast do we pay our invoices? You know, how, you know, usually when people start having financial trouble, you know, the first thing they do is, okay, I'm going to make the house payment. But, you know, the newspaper guy is going to wait another, you know, a month or something. You know what I mean? So, I mean, what are our options there on deferrals?
You know, we can delay payment. We're pretty timely right now. We try to be very timely.
But what does that mean? Like, is that
that's about
15
days?
30 days? We're on 30 days?
Yeah, we're very timely in doing that. A program that we have we're going to bring to the next board meeting is American Express. It's a way of extending for about 45 days what your payment is. We can pay the bill with the American Express, but then we don't pay American Express for another 30 days so that we have a longer time frame to make payment. Plus, that builds into a rebate, so we get 1% back like we do on Office Depot. So we're looking at every way to still make it timely and make it back. But, yeah, definitely if we delayed it for 2 weeks, we could project out what that would be. Most of our expenses, are maintenance-related, buying gas and diesel for the buses, we're buying educational materials in that books and supply line. That's the one huge budget line we have we should really look at and determine, do we absolutely need it? It's nice to have the latest and greatest, but can that be deferred? I think one of the public speakers talked about technology. Do we need to have certain technology? Kind of looking at all of our plans and what could we defer a little bit to put in so we don't even incur the cost, and then what do we buy? And if there's any way to defer those payments, that would be a double win for us.
So we're going to have financial troubles and we're going to get a credit card? Is that what I'm hearing?
It's not a credit card.
I have a family member that does that. So I don't know. It's, I'm not sure it's working for them.
Not to
sure
pay on the credit card. The way it'll work, instead of issuing the check to the vendor, it goes to American Express. So we're still making the same payments. We're not adding interest. We're not paying a fee. But it gives you, the vendor's paid, but you don't have the cash flow problem.
Okay. On issues like transportation, I just make sure I understand, because I think I'm a little confused, because when I look at here at the annual cost, right, on regular and special ed, and there are differences, because special ed, even though we have special ed encroachment, there's very little we can actually probably do, you know, about that. I mean, there were a few suggestions from school services, but in reality, there's very little we can do and probably would want to do. I just want to make sure I understand. Regular transportation, the subsidy is $1 million. Or is that the total cost? That's where I'm kind of confused. Okay. On here it has, you know, that the regular transportation cost is $646,000.
Right. I think what I spoke earlier, we talked about special education. In addition to this expense, there was like another $1 million beyond that is the encroachment. On the regular transportation, we get revenue that's built in.
Right.
And we're charging back for the special trips, and we're still not making it. We're still have an encroachment about $200,000.
Okay, so that's right. Okay, so the encroachment is $200,000. Mm-hmm. And by charge back, we're charging the sites back. We're just charging our own budgets,
charging
though, right?
Charging ourselves, right. So it doesn't go anywhere.
Yeah, so that doesn't actually. We can increase that and make it zero, but that doesn't mean anything. Okay, so there's about $200,000 then in regular transportation subsidies that we're not being reimbursed by the state. Is that right?
Correct.
Okay, and what are the chargebacks? How much of the chargebacks is that?
We had about $193,000 last year.
So it's about $400,000 then, really, because I kind of count
if
we're paying ourselves
right
out of a different account or something. That's okay. So it's about $400,000 on the regular transportation side. Okay. You didn't mention class size reduction, and I don't know what our subsidy is on class size reduction. I know at the beginning it probably wasn't because we hired a bunch of new teachers, but as they start going through the cycle.
I'm not sure what you mean by subsidy, but in our K through three, there is a penalty if we exceed the 20-to-1.
Right.
That's reduced. Right now, like at West Cove, we're running right about that, the 20-to-1. We're very good at being in that ratio. In most of our schools, all of our schools, are below our contracted level that's required. I'm not sure if I answered your question or if I understood it.
Well, I guess we receive a certain amount of money from the state for class size reduction, right? Mm-hmm. So my question is, does that cover the cost of the class size reduction program?
I don't know for sure. I have to look into that for you.
You know, because I don't know, because I know there was a penalty at 21, but at 22 the penalty was reduced. I know there were some districts that were looking at 22-to-1 because it was a net positive for the district to cover those costs. I mean, I don't know if that's what I want to do, but I'd like to know what those numbers are.
Yeah, we did look at those.
Mm-hmm.
And you do, when you go to the first level, you do save some money because it offsets the penalty. The next step is really not beneficial. And then when you get even bigger.
By next step, you mean what? 22 or 23?
No, I think they're.
It's a 24, 25, it starts going down.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's when it starts hitting hard.
Okay. But then at that size, you have such a large class. You know, are we benefiting from those savings? But then if we're more strategic and say we're not going to touch K through 3, but maybe incrementally 4 through 12. If we add two students to a classroom, what could we say? What could we do? And there is no penalties.
Right. And I think there was a deal that the Teacher Association signed off on that like about 8 years ago or something like that, temporarily to save money.
Yeah, actually, contractually, 4 through 8, we can go to 32, mm-hmm. and 9 through 12 to 33, and we're probably running closer to around 28. So.
Okay.
So we already have flexibility between the contract and where we are to make that change without having to renegotiate it.
Mm-hmm.
But again, you know, what do you lose by increasing those class sizes?
We talked about lottery. I thought there were lottery funds that are like 3 years old, 4 years old we haven't spent. Am I wrong? We spent all those? I thought when we looked at the last one, we had, you know, we had spent some, but there were still lottery reserves that were in place.
I'd have to go back and get the actual amount from what years. But we do spend those dollars in our special funding as well as other projects.
Mm-hmm.
But and you're correct. We don't spend all the lottery dollars each year.
Right, yeah. I mean, I know we do it from the previous year, but I don't think we've done the last
couple. They may roll over. I can get you how much is rolling from each year.
And then I guess a couple things. One is there's supposed to be, well, I guess on transportation, I'm not sure. Did we budget the right amount for gas? I know I didn't this year. You know,
I
don't know. You know, I'm not sure. You know what our fuel costs and how that factors into stuff. But because I think we're going to end up running some kind of problem, I assume.
Right. Well, the kind of good news is our large buses are on natural gas,
mm-hmm.
and so that's your regular transportation. Our smaller buses we run on diesel, and we use those for special education mainly. So again, diesel is still very high. But we're doing everything we can to reduce transportation costs with alternative fuels.
Yeah, but that's why I want to look at the, you know, going out to 2012, 13, 14, because when you look at, you know, what Edison says they're going to charge and what water they're going to charge, you know, we're talking about 30% increases, you know, in some cases, you know, 1 year to the next. And so when you start looking that out, you know, for a district our size, you know, that's a lot of money. And I think we need to have that. I mean, I want to be able to see that in perspective. Ms. Foldis brought up charter schools, and they do provide also the services money, too, the $200 or whatever it is, $250.
So,
yeah, 270 plus the 3%. So that needs to see what – I don't think we know what's going to happen there. And, of course, every kid that comes from out of the district, you know, that's extra money. Redevelopment. We didn't talk about redevelopment, but there will be, if the redevelopment bill passes, and they were one vote short of passing, and they get rid of redevelopment agencies, that is a plus for the school district, is my understanding, because we still get our increment that we currently get, and then the way they work the property taxes would be an increase to the school district in revenue for that. You know, I know I hear they may have another vote on that in a week or two, but, you know, I don't know if there's the – they need one more vote in the assembly. They had it in the Senate. But, I mean, that obviously, I mean, I was looking at it was going to be like $250,000 difference or something like that. And then a nutrition program, you know, I've asked about that because there's been radical changes now that are being mandated from the federal government in our nutritional program. And while we normally ran surpluses in it, I'm not sure that now the reimbursement rate is going to be able to sustain those changes. And I don't know how that impacts all this. I actually was kind of surprised to see this as our outline tonight, I'll be honest. I thought I didn't get my packet. That's what I said, Monica. I thought I missed my packet because I thought I was going to see numbers, you know. And, you know, you brought up things that we over-budgeted. And I know the district claims they can't produce this document anymore. But we had a document at one time where we had what was budgeted in one the year before, what was spent the year before, what was budgeted that year, what we spent that year, and the projected was. And, you know, I remember just going through that real quickly, and we identified, like, money and water. You know, there was, like, $400,000 in extra in water or something like that, you know, that we'd been budgeting every year. And here we were about to cut stuff, and there was $400,000 just by looking at that side by side. I don't know why. I guess it was an old system is what Mr. Frutos kept saying when I kept asking about that. But, I mean, I think those things are valuable to be able to look at those kind of line item stuff.
We can go back and look at that. I know for budget to what we're running actuals, we're projecting the year in. We definitely can do it for this year.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll see what we can do going backwards. I'm not sure about the history, but I can look into it.
Yeah, I mean, because that was very useful at that time. And you could easily look and go, well, why do we keep budgeting $30,000, you know, when we use 15, 15, 15? And then you start looking at all the school sites, and it added up real quick. So that'd be one thing. The other thing is, I thought we did, or the board did, I want to say 39. I don't know if that's the right number. Eliminate 39 classified positions and reduced hours on some over the last few years as they became vacant and things like that. Is that correct?
I can go back and look historical.
I think that was in the memo that Mr. Siemens sent as part of a request a few months ago, but we did eliminate those positions. I mean, most of them were vacant or they got moved around, but we did eliminate those, or the board did. And then where the librarians were, reduced the hours on the media center clerks, or the board did, I should say, because it wasn't unanimous, but the board did. And, so, I mean, there were those things that we did already and with the classified staff. Is that correct? I mean, Mrs. Bassam wasn't here.
She's going to check into it. I don't know.
You don't remember?
I don't know what's in this budget. Okay, I mean, basically...
That was my question.
The question that you had about what you expected to get, I've been asking for that to be brought forward, okay? They're scrubbing the numbers so that they can bring you actual correct information. In terms of it being 39, do you remember if it was 39, Mr. Seaman?
I don't remember. But there were eliminated positions that we eliminated classified over the last few years.
I don't remember eliminating 39 classified
positions. Yeah, I don't remember.
It was 12.
No, it was more than that. 29 and 39, it was something like 9. But, and then we did reduce the hours of the media centers at the elementary school. I mean, so we did do, so I mean, classified did take it part hit of a hit already that way. And I think that's it for now.
In preparing for the bottom to fall out in the storm, my questions, and thank you everybody, they asked a lot of the things that I had, was in terms of capacity. If we need to, for example, do we have the capacity to have two middle schools as opposed to three? Things of that nature. We used to have one high school, now we have two. Given that we've opened up a high school, does Edgewood can they even accommodate bringing the students back from Walnut Grove, or keeping Walnut Grove as the middle school and sending the kids from Edgewood over there? That was my question, was capacity. What, in terms of our district, can we accommodate? Obviously, the high school can't be any larger, so I don't think we can send the students over there anymore, but our middle schools and our elementary. And I'm looking at worst-case scenarios, so that's what I would like to see. And then you did start to cover, I wanted to know, again, preparing for the worst case doesn't mean I want to do this, but what are the maximums that we can have elementary, middle school, and high school in class sizes? Okay. And I've never been an advocate for that. I've always been an advocate for smaller classes. But again, as Mr. Cox has said, we may be looking 10 years out.
Contractually, for kindergarten, currently contractually, kindergarten's 31, 1 through 3 is 30, 4 through 8 is 32, and 9 through 12 is 33.
Okay, I got
now
the 33.
Now, I need to, when you talk about capacity, too, I want to go back and make sure that our classroom sizes can actually fit these students. We've actually had accidents where people are tripping over backpacks and things like that because they're pretty compact in classes.
Well, they used to have that many of them.
And then the question you had, were you talking about consolidation or expansion?
Consolidation.
Consolidation. Okay.
Right, if we needed to. Again, I'm looking at worst-case scenarios. And thank you for adding, because, yes, some classrooms can't go much larger. Maybe the state is saying we can go larger, but classrooms physically can't because of what's restricted by law. You have to be a certain size.
Square footage.
Thank you.
So we'll look at class size and the classes and the different schools that you have and report back.
Thank you. So that was, thank you. We've already covered most of what I needed.
Ms. Polis?
I have one more question. Do we know how many students come from outside of our district to our district because we have a longer school year?
If that's the reason.
Right. They list that because that would be something they could use if they appealed through the county or...
Oh, I see.
And so if we shortened it, how many students would we be losing?
Thank you. I have not seen that as a reason for coming into our school. You know, they have to write their reason.
Right.
I mean, I've not seen that
It would be a great reason. We could advertise that if we kept this longer school year.
Not to the kids, though, to the parents.
Yeah, right, for the parents.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's because that might work at the county.
I'm sorry, I had one more question I forgot. And that was with the nutrition program. I know that we have one of the lowest rates, or if not the lowest rate, in the San Gabriel Valley, which is great. Can we increase the cost as a way to generate some, I know it won't be a lot of revenue, but some revenue? Is that legal? I'm not sure. Yes, okay.
Okay.
So we could increase to a $2 for lunch meal versus $1.35.
Your question is, if we increase that, can we move those funds from food services into the general
yes.
fund? So I'll just verify that. That we
okay.
can do that because we currently have a surplus. So if we could do that, we could do that now, which we have not calculated into anything.
Okay, that was my
answer. Can I add on to your question?
Go ahead.
With that, can we get the percentage of students on free and reduced breakfast and lunch programs?
Sure. I'll be glad to bring that back. I don't have that, but it's different by each school. I'll bring it back.
Before we think about increasing, and maybe even if we have somewhere in the school district demographics or socioeconomic demographics on people who may be borderline in our school district qualifying for those programs.
Yeah. And so those are very important statistics. We'll bring those back. I know they have in food services.
Just Ms. Polis kind of got me thinking about the longer school day thing, but I mean, have we looked at Glendora, which was suffering from declines in enrollment, you know, when it was a district of choice? You know, what's the impact to us as a district of choice? I mean, we already let kids go, right? So what would be the impact to us of being a district of choice?
I laugh because we supposedly are a district of choice. If you go back in our records to way back, right, Mr. Seaman, I don't remember when, but at some point when Dr. Fish was here.
Yeah, we said we were, but it wasn't the state one.
Mm-hmm. It wasn't done?
It wasn't the current state definition of it.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Mm-hmm. But it was fundamentally, we didn't object or didn't block those that are transferring out, and we accepted, obviously, with certain limitations with students coming in. So we've been a fairly wide open district.
I'm
going to
give you
district.
A rough number, and we'll verify this, but I can tell you we have about 600-some students in and about 700-some students out.
Right.
Well, my point is, like, Communa Valley's talking about selling school sites, you know, closing a school. You know, some of the districts around us are going to have those kinds of impacts on their budget, and you know, I don't know what the impact is if we're a district of choice. I mean, we already let people go, so that's not an issue for us. You know, but what's the impact of saying, okay, we can accept X amount of kids above whatever amount? You know, what's the impact to us? How is that possible? Now, I know that means school districts around us don't like us, you know, because that's what happens to districts of choice like Glendora and Walnut and others. They do that because what happens is the districts around them, kids go, 175 days, whatever, you know, I don't have to jump through hoops, boom, you know, they offer this, they offer that.
But I
my
think
school's
that
closing, you know, all those kinds of things. I mean, what is the impact?
But I think that the impact has got to be, if I understand what you're saying, it should be minimal. We should have no impact whatsoever. Those districts those districts that you said had been exclusionary. They said, we don't want you. We don't want you coming into our district. We're going to stop you at the border, not coming in. Walnut, Glendora, I don't know for sure. I'm just, it's my suspicion. We, on the other hand, have been quite wide open. We've always, or at least my thought has always been, is look, I've always thought that we've, and it certainly has over the last, at least the last decade, offered an extraordinary educational, alternative educational opportunities. And to that, I thought we've been able to attract students, and we've not excluded anybody, like I said, except for under, you know, fairly rare situations.
No, that is correct, but there are many people who can't get the district's permission to get out of their district.
Oh, I see.
Is getting out.
Is it getting
out?
It's
getting
out.
Past the Berlin Wall around the school district is the problem. You know, because there's districts, especially as money started getting tighter, that became even less likely to let them out, you know, and so that's my point. It's like, do we have spots for another 300 kids? You know, I mean, I don't know. Do we? And, you know, how does, if a district of choice gets them past that barrier, that hump of being able to get their district to sign them out. That's what I'm curious about. Because the other way doesn't matter to us because we already have that as policy. So that's what I don't know.
Mr. Marentes, is it would the county support if a parent puts that they're coming to West Covina because we have a longer school year based on the fact that the districts around us have less instructional, you know, year? Would that be a reason for them to have to let them come to us?
They would probably look at that as one of the factors. It's hard to tell sometimes with the county exactly what they would have pulled, but that would be a factor for them. Yep.
Well, that's different than district choice. So district choice is automatic,
right.
To a certain number.
Mm-hmm. We'll look into that.
That's my point.
Yeah.
So back to my question of can our capacity, if we become a district of choice, again, how much can we grow? How much more can we grow? If we keep all of our sites, how much can we go in the classrooms? Because then we're limited by that.
School, I'd prefer to see how do we fill it.
I would agree.
Okay, I have a couple of comments. Mr. Spence, you talked about some of the issues involving some of the kind of over-budgeting as such, over-anticipating, over-accruing expenses, and then ultimately not utilizing those, and so having some, and some of that apparently happened actually this year, where we found some over-accruals and picked up some income in that capacity. Do we ever look at the school sites comparatively so that we could have like comparative financial statements to identify issues on a site by site basis, which would look at basically the basic fundamentals, because I know that there's one school in districts that's continually accused of making millions and millions of dollars a year. I'd be interested to see whether or not all of our sites are making that kind of money. And do we have that capability of doing that?
We do prepare site budgets. We've never kind of done a comparison between them, but that would be something that we could do. We actually take by site the staffing, their costs. We can figure in the benefits. We actually have other record keeping for utilities and telephone, trying to load it as a fully loaded site. And then you can look at it as a staffing ratio, the ADA, and do that. So we would have to go the next step. We'd build that out a little bit more and then do the comparison, but we could bring that back.
Sometimes I'd like to look, and that would be fine, if it's not, I don't want you to spend a tremendous amount of effort. I just I'd see that in my own practice as means of which to identify, income and expense variations and rationale for losses when we're able to take comparative and look comparatively among different companies in the same environment and how the current company that I'm looking at may change as a result of that. So I was thinking maybe we looked at each of our schools side by side, maybe we'd help in that case. So that's one thing. I sort of look at this sort of state funding as such as sort of this kind of off the cliff, and we got a letter from the county that talked to us about the number of second interim, I guess, yeah, it was a first interim. Anyway, we got a report talking about the number of districts that are, mm-hmm. Unqualified. I don't know if that's the proper term, but anyway, that they're approaching this point of not being able to sustain themselves, not being able to meet their current obligations, not being able to do that sort of stuff. I look at that edge of that cliff, and I see lots of schools going very close to that, or school districts going very close to that. We, on the other hand, are quite a ways from that. What's that impact have on, do you think, on the state going forward? And, as if let's say the worst-case scenario says that it goes up to $1,000 of reductions in ADA, and all of a sudden school districts start falling off the face of the earth because they just can't sustain the current expenses, what then?
Well, when you're insolvent, the state takes over and starts running your school district and kind of starts making some of those decisions, mm-hmm. the staffing level and the class size. At least the last LACO meeting I attended. And then you don't have that control anymore. And so you may lose all the wonderful programs that we've already done. We're far away from there, so we can run those scenarios. What if it's 350, 500, 700, 1,000? So you could see what the impact would be to us. But as more school districts, need the state to run them and need additional funding, there's, it's a draw on the state, and there are less and less funding. So it could come back to even hurt us a little bit, because there'll be less monies to distribute. So,
Mr. Cox, I think the last numbers I saw was there are 13 districts in California that are in negative, and there's 97 that are qualified. So 97 yeah. qualified, 13 negative. And let me tell you, there's not enough people in Sacramento to run 97 schools.
No matter what. Of course not.
So they're not going to come and take over our district. There's impossibility. So what happens is the state has financial problems, so they give us more flexibility. So things in the past that used to, you know, you couldn't use, say, for example, your question today about nutrition services, absolutely not in the past. You cannot take nutrition services and fund, you know, something else. They may come back and say, oh, but future, you know, we'll let you play with your own money, is basically what they're doing. They're allowing us within our own means to eat up our own budget reserves and, you know, programs until they have to step in and do something. But, you know, the whole ed jobs was because President Obama knew a lot of districts are going to put people on the streets, right?
Yeah, and Ms. Shoemaker sort of touched on that a little bit, but the idea of that, no, our ducks are in a row, so you know, and we did everything right. I mean, theoretically, we didn't fire anybody. We didn't put it on furloughs.
We didn't need it one time.
If that was the intent, we shouldn't have got that money.
We didn't need it.
Yeah, we didn't need it, but we got it.
He said, whether you like it or not.
We got it.
So you know what we did? We saved it.
No, we didn't.
Yes, we did. Yes, we did. We put it, it's in the general fund. It's funding teacher positions, which we would have had to fund, and we saved it for that deficit you're worried about.
Okay. But again... but that's that money that, you know, we're hoping is going to be there, and it's
not going to be there. Well, in 2012-13, I asked Ms. Basson to prepare a narrative, not to exclude it. The narrative will give you a better indication of the assumptions for that year. And in that year, there would be such a cash flow problem, even for districts who are doing well, like West Covina, that is just unrealistic for the state to do that. Or even, you know, the government to do that. So what will happen is they will create new rules for funding education.
But there, I mean, we're a microcosm of something that's going on a federal level and a statewide level, and that's what I was alluding to earlier. Look, they have their salaries and wages and benefits, and they have their interests, whether it's, you know, it's not just the, what is the 40 cents that goes, or 40% Prop 98 money that goes to education. You know, we've got nurses and firemen and police officers and state employees and county employees that do an absolutely necessary function in our state. And so to say that, well, we're not going to let our schools go under, we're not going to let that sort of stuff, means that, no, it's a give and take.
Right.
You know, somebody's going to have to look. Are we going to let prisoners out? We're just not going to enforce that. We're not going to enforce the laws. We're not going to fight fires.
That's right.
We're not going to heal the healthy. We're not going to feed the poor. No, of course we are. We're going to do all of those things and fund our little tiny microcosm that we've done so well in accumulating. But because we've done well, we won't benefit. But everybody else that has let their house go into foreclosure and gets to stay in that house for another 6 months, a year, 2 or 3 years, not making any payments, and I still make my payments every month.
I'd
just soon let it go into foreclosure, but I got too much equity in it.
Right.
I'm an old guy. Right. You know, stuff happened.
I agree. Not that you're an old guy, but your argument.
Yeah. but so I don't see that money coming. I don't see that money coming
to us. So here's the situation. Because we are at the mercy of this larger economic difficulty, it's really important that we make decisions with as much information as we can get at the time we have to make them. So between now and the May revise, we will know a lot about what the state is going to do or not do. We will know what's going to happen in June or not. We will know what's going to happen in November. So our goal today is to basically say, yes, we've had 5 years of a very good run. That's unusual for a school district. Today, there isn't a single school district around us that hasn't done layoffs. There isn't a single school district that has our balance in the budget, not one. So because of that,
I'm not saying that I'm not facing what is an inevitable storm coming down the pike. What I'm saying is that we're going to have to take this in steps because of the cyclical nature and the fact that we're at the mercy of the state and the federal government. We don't want to do something that hurts our students from continuing to succeed without having a good understanding. And that's why I know it sounds, Pollyannish, but obviously, we want to protect the quality of programs that we offer to kids. Consolidating, let me give you an example. Edgewood High School cannot be consolidated. We brought in 50 more students into the district as a result of opening up Edgewood High School. My goal is that next year we bring in another 50 or 100 from the outside as a result of this program. Kindergarten. By adding full-day kindergarten, we had a lot more parents say, great, now I don't need a babysitter. We're bringing them back to West Covina. By offering after-school programs, we've brought back into our community people who had to go outside of our community because they work further and whatnot. And so there's a lot of ifs that have to be considered. And I think that, you know, to do a sort of slash-and-burn draconian approach to education only hurts children. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, we're better than most, and I know, you know, you understand the cliff that everybody's going to. We are going to have to make budget reductions. We are going to have to reduce expenditures. And so we are going to discuss what those first things are that we are going to cut.
I had a friend of mine come to me. She is I call her a friend. I want you all to understand that. She is also the president of her teachers association, and she's also a member of the negotiating team. She came to me the middle of March, absolutely distraught. I hadn't talked to her in probably a year or two even. Absolutely distraught because her school district had just issued reduction in force letters. She came in absolutely distraught because teachers that have been in the district, not just the temporaries and probationaries and that, teachers that have been in the district up to 13 years had been given notices of reductions. I said to her, well, wait a minute. That can't possibly be true. That's too much. And I said, but what did you do? What's the district done about furloughs? What have they done about cutting the number of days? What have they done about cutting the number of hours? What have they done about class size reduction? What have they done about cuts? She looked at me absolutely cold stare, and she said, last year we took a 10% cut in pay across the board. The year before that, we did furloughs, number of days, number of hours, class size reductions. This is the escalation where we're going. And I want to stop that now. I mean, we've got to do something now. I mean, even though we don't have it now in the presentation that we were given, but we were given it at the whatever meeting when we talked about the second interims. And that did go out in this projection going out to 2013. Mm-hmm. But if you look at the numbers, we're looking at total expenditures going, you know, $74 million. I'm starting back into well, if you even look at that graph that you show and showing the expenditures, we're looking at since 2008, $71 million in total expenditures, $75 million, $75 million, $79 million, $74 million, $75 million. We're not changing. We're not cutting nothing. We're saving the programs and everything else that makes us what we are today. But then we look back and say, wait a minute, that's been all right because our revenues have exceeded our expenses in many of those years. But all of a sudden, our revenues are going down. Our revenues are in the 60s, in the mid to high 60s. And I don't see that changing. There's nothing that's coming forward that says that the May revise is going to change that. The extension of tax cuts or tax rates is going to change that. I don't see the economy growing in such a manner that's going to allow the state of California to do that. Property values, since I bought my home, probably went up with inflation or maybe even over greater over the last 40 years. in a three-year period from 2006 to 2009 went down 25% to 30%. There were times when they were going down in value 1% a month. These people can't make their payments. This is not going to come back in the reasonable future. We're not going to see property values going up to the 2006 levels. We're not going to see those increased property values as increases. People were building wealth on property values, and it's not there. They're just happy to have the job. Unemployment in California is what? 12%. If we're hoping that we're going to get our money from a federal government that's virtually bankrupt, the thing that they have for us over us is that they can print money, but our state can't print money. And the state money that we're getting, where we're losing our money, is in state revenues, is in EDA. And you're saying if it's going to be $330, and it could be as much as $1,000, and we're going to spend money like we're, I shouldn't say this, but like drunken sailors.
I knew you would say that.
You know, we're going to go on and on and on. We got to do something. We've got to make these changes. And, you know, we've got representatives from here from our associations. I heard you loud and clear. I do not want to cut the people. I don't want to cut the classified people. I don't want to cut salaries. But we don't have any choice. It's not our choice. I mean, we're all loving family people here and have had or do have kids or maybe hopefully will have grandchildren in the school district. I don't want to see those services reduced. But we got to do something, and that's just the real reality of it all. And if it means doing those things, then doggone it, that's what we have to do.
Okay, let me just ask you if you would ask your friend what her enrollment drop was in that school district. Because one of the things that we've enjoyed is this flat sort of enrollment during the past few years.
I'm sure that's certainly an exponential, and I'm sure that it probably decreased, but that doesn't mitigate the fact that state revenues are going down on a per-person basis.
Right, so but maybe what, you know, is being recommended in terms of becoming a district of choice, bringing in students from, you know, other districts around us, is one of the first steps in terms of what we need to follow up on. Because I do know that there are surrounding districts that whose kids and families ask to come here, and they're denied that, you know, opportunity. So we will definitely look into that. And we monitor our schools very closely so that when someone comes to their school and asks for an enrollment packet, that they are given one. Some districts will only give an enrollment packet if your student is reading at grade level. We don't test our kids before they come to us. We welcome these families to come to us. So there's a lot of issues, and I totally understand that. We're not going to solve the problem, I think, tonight. We will never be in the red. We will never go into a receivership in the district. We're not going to be bankrupt. We will work this through at the appropriate time and for kids. So I think we will have another meeting in May in which we will have the second round of this conversation. And at that point, you'll get another picture and decide what steps to take at that point. We'll get it again in June. We'll close our books. You know, one of the things that I keep asking for an analysis over 5 years and of our numbers is that I know for a fact Mr. Frutos very well, and I know for a fact that some of the budget line items, as Mr. Spence pointed out, need to be looked at. Okay, so we are going to do that kind of detail so that you're making the best decisions with the best information.
Even on a $45 million cost of, or 40, let's say call it $50 million, we cut 10%. That's still only $5 million of savings across the board in salaries and reductions. That still isn't going to make it. If I were fortunate enough to have, let's say, $20 million in my retirement plan, you were to come to me with the budget that's presented and the projection and ask me to fund your venture, and you've told me, look, I expect to get $60 million a year. I expect to have my enrollment the same. I expect a $60 million and $70 million spending, and ask me to capitalize this venture that for the next 3 years is going to lose $7 million a year, and ask me to put my retirement money into this venture with no indication, no way whatsoever, that I'm going to be paid back, I'm not going to give you a penny. And that's where we're at.
Right. Well, we don't have those kind of controls, so I wouldn't give us a penny either. However, if you look at 2004-05, look at 2004-05, the district did run with a lot less money at one time.
Oh, wow. 2004. Look at 1995.
5?
Right.
Okay, I don't have back
and
that far.
Look at you in the chart. In the chart.
Oh, sorry.
And we have to see what the enrollment was at that time to figure out.
Enrollment's gone up since the. I mean, it went down at bankruptcy and it started going up in the early 90s.
So we need to study these things to ensure that, you know, the historical
Absolutely.
Perspective of the state in my 35 years is what this graph shows. It's up and it's down. I agree with you that we've never had such bad economic times, and that's why it makes it so difficult right now to really predict. And we will bring you some polished information and follow-up to all the questions that you asked tonight, so that you have that to consider for the next meeting.
Anybody else?
Yeah. Well, my only thing is, I've been on this board a long time, and I've voted for cuts, and I haven't voted for cuts. The slash and burn happened in this district when they did go bankrupt, where they slash and burned, and I don't think they did the best job they could of figuring out where to slash and burn. And so I don't think – I haven't heard anyone really say they want to slash and burn. You know, I do think –
Did you hear him say he does?
Huh?
You didn't hear him
say – slash and burn. I heard a grumpy old
man.
That's what
he said. He said, I do.
I heard Charlie Brown. I heard Charlie Brown.
Yeah.
He put on the record. He does.
He doesn't really want to slash and burn because he doesn't have that kind of guts. But
that was a compliment, I guess.
Anyways.
Thank you, Mr. Spence.
You're welcome. And Sherry, if you're listening, you know what I mean. But I do think that, I appreciate the district of choice stuff because I would prefer to go that route first.
Definitely.
You know, and see what we can maximize. Obviously, you know, there's probably things we need to look at right away as far as
right.
what we can slow down on or right. or so forth. But, you know, I would prefer to do that. And you mentioned that. I think that's fine. I think that's where we need to go rather than cutting. Because obviously... You know, I've been stumped by, you know, the fact that we haven't gotten an enrollment because I keep looking around. You know, all the districts around us keep going down. I go, man, you know, how do we manage to keep that going, you know? And we let all our kids go, okay, and we're still kind of even. Okay, well, that's because we turn out a quality product. And,
right.
and you know, we've been doing that for a long time as we recovered from the bankruptcy, and we offer more choices. And I prefer to do that. And so if we can... If we can minimize the damage by growing our programs, I would prefer to do that.
Right.
And,
right.
you know, so, I mean, I think that's a good way, you know, to go.
Right.
My question, I agree, and I don't want to do big cuts, and as you all heard, I prefer smaller class sizes. How close can we get to running a PR campaign to say all the great things that our district is doing without Lakel coming down on us saying you're stealing kids? But how close can we? I mean, we just won the robotics competition. Our theater program is stellar. Our
AP classes.
Our AP classes are best among the best in the nation. How close? We don't. We don't have a PR person on staff, and I'm not saying I want one. But if we can't, because people are looking at their options right now. Parents are for the fall. So if we can capitalize on what they're looking for. That may help us in building our numbers.
I believe we have either done one or we have a series of publications in the paper. One for the IB school.
Right, we have one for Edgewood High and one for kindergarten registration. They allow us to like a public service announcement.
Okay.
But we could also consider...
Do people with kids still read newspapers?
No, online.
I know, I'm just being realistic. I mean,
thank you. Because I know this is the time that parents are looking at what are they going to do for the fall, and all of our surrounding districts are going to look at big cuts. And so we stand a really good chance to attract more students. But again, it goes back to capacity, right? Do we have the capacity to take them all in?
Well, yeah, and that's part of the district of choice stuff. So I think that's.
Well, and the first step in good PR is, you know, tonight we have Mr. Ogden here who is a reporter.
Ugh.
And I'm sure. Took copious notes on your list of achievements in West Covina Unified.
I hope.
Yeah. And all the people over 80 that read this paper can tell us.
Well, we have stuff on our website. We try to send things out to our schools. I know the IB, Edgewood High School is going to private schools and talking to, you know, some of the parents. Obviously, our schools are the best publicity, and they talking to their parents and neighbors.
But I'm very proud of the fact that even though this is a difficult discussion, we've made it here after 5 years of actually building our programs and our quality and not cutting them.
Really quickly, one program that I would love to see expand is our junior ROTC. And we had a presentation a couple of months ago. I would like to get information on if the instructors are now finally going to schools outside of our school district.
We'll bring you a report.
Because surrounding school districts do not have this program.
Correct.
That was hard to get to.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Oh, shoot.
Mr. Cox.
Yeah, did we forget to take... Oh, it's just one more thing. Cammy, go ahead. No. Thank you.
I'm certainly not for slash and burn, and I want to let all the staff here this evening know that, and we heard that in some of the comments, that they might not feel appreciated, and that they are appreciated. And every day, I know children are going home expressing to their parents different things they've learned, and the parents are grateful for what's happening. And I know that the staff doesn't always hear that, but at the open houses I was just at, I know that I heard parents ranting and raving about how great all the staff was. And I'm sorry that they don't feel appreciated, and I hope that you pass it on to them that they're excellent. And I can't say how much I appreciate them personally on them going overboard on what they did, and it was made very obvious at the open houses. And Ms. Rosenthal, my son is one that would cheer for you, and you definitely made a difference in his life. And so, yes, you all of you that are here tonight that work with our students, just thank you.
And I apologize. I did forget to do a one administrative thing. So we have a record as to, in fact, who was here this evening. So would you please take roll call, please?
Mr. Cox.
Here.
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 Mrs. Polis.
Here.
Sorry.
Mrs. Spence.
Here.
Mrs. Lisa.
Here.
Anything else? All right. With that, we are adjourned at 7:20.